Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
Boom. What is going on, everybody? This is Jeremy Turton from Brassman Reptiles.
And I'm Rob, and I'm creeping it real.
And we are kicking off the new year strong. If you saw our last episode or listened to our last episode, we're kind of talking about what we're hoping to do. Oh God. YouTube was in the background and that just started really loudly in my ear. you heard that we're coming back with vengeance coming into 2024. So if you check us out and watch the videos live on YouTube, you're going to get a whole bunch of Reptile Talk content over the next 3 days, which I'm super stoked about. If you are just listening to the audio only, we've got a bunch of episodes coming your way, and I'm super stoked about it.
Yes, so, sir. Let's go.
Before we bring on our guests, how you doing, Rob?
I'm okay. It's a little chilly out right now, so I'm bummed that I have not really seen a whole lot of reptiles out recently.
Have you found a January herp yet?
No. Well, I found a fence lizard and an anole, but no snakes yet.
Okay. All right. Well, look, it's January.
Yeah. Yeah. I found two snakes on not New Year's Eve, but the day before New Year's Eve. So December 30th, I was finding snakes. So.
Okay. All right. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It still beats New England.
Yeah. For real. I was texting with my friend Lauren today and she's like, oh yeah, we got 6 inches of snow. And I was like, No, never.
You're like, I got 6 inches of decay snake right here.
I didn't think that's where you're going with it, but okay.
We're going to try to keep this PG.
Hey.
Oh, man. No, I'm doing good, man. The new year has been a whirlwind, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. I've been starting this new build for the Amazon Tree Boa racks, which I'm very excited about. I've been staining the wood today, which is cool. It's really nice, like red oak stain. Ooh. And it's coming along. Yeah, it's coming along super nicely. These Cambro tubs, dude.
Tight.
These are freaking awesome.
They look like, really cool.
Yeah, I'm so stoked about it. So this is the first step into getting the Amazon wall completed. And then I'll probably build at least two more of these racks. Mm. And then the rest will be like cages and stuff like that. So,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. So stoked about that. Also, shout out to our show sponsor, Black Box Cages.
They help
make all this possible. And now you can use code ReptileTalk at checkout and save some money on a cage. So you should go head on over to blackboxcages.com. Speaking of Black Box, Jen is in the building. What's up, Jen?
Don't forget, quickest turnaround time in the game.
That's it.
Waiting until the snake is an adult to get the enclosure. So
exactly.
Make sure you hit them up.
Nice. And they've got some great things going on there, working on arboreal racks, Sterilite 66 quart racks. They're working on a new rack that I'm going to talk about a little bit more later, especially when it comes in. Yes, it's the fastest turnaround unless you order a custom rack like me. Then it takes a little bit longer, especially when you lock it in like during the holiday season. But super, super excited about what's to come from them with this rack. And I'll talk more about that once it's here and I can actually like show it off a little bit.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, so okay, without further ado, I'm super stoked. We're talking Florida. We're talking about and not the bad part of Florida.
Yeah,
the decent part of Florida. So we're gonna be hanging with our boy Yoshi from Modern Reptile Shop. Let's get him on.
And the Reptiles With podcast. Hey.
Bam. Hello. How are you? Dude? Chilling, hanging out.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know, our good buddy Alex decided to chime in with this comment. I'm going to highlight this comment.
Wow. I'm going to read it. Are you guys about to have the tallest person in the industry on? Yes. It's
yeah. He's like, do not ever bring out a tape measure around me, but I am the tallest person.
I am 100% the tallest. I cannot stand next to Will Nace or anybody.
He's like Chad Brown who?
Oh gosh. But yeah. What's up, dude?
I'm good, man. Rob mentioned it's cold. It's cold here too. For the most part, I think tonight it's getting into the 40s. That's freezing for me. I'm a Miami boy. I don't like it. Yeah.
That's nothing.
I'm not with the cold. Like, my dad's from the Caribbean and I got all his blood. So, like, the second that it's below 70 degrees, I need a hoodie. And tonight it's supposed to get down to like 20 degrees here. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to sit in my reptile room. I'm just going to, I'm going to see if I can put a heat panel on the floor and just lay on it. Like,
nice.
Oh, for real. Gosh. That's awesome. Yeah. 40 degrees. I'd be okay with 40 degrees.
Still wearing shorts in New England, right?
Yeah. Yes. 100%, dude.
100%. I could never. I went out today with sweatpants, a hoodie, and then a jacket on top and my beanie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude, New England people are different because when it's wintertime and you get like a 40, 45 degree day, everyone's out in shorts and t-shirts. They're like, this is summer weather right now.
Dude, I don't know about that, but crazy, I will tell you this, man, when I used to go down to New York to visit Lenny all the time, it didn't matter when it was or what was happening outside, that man was always wearing shorts. And it didn't matter if there was 3 inches of snow on the ground, it was like shorts and sneakers. And I was like, bro, as a New Englander, I'm concerned. Oh, gosh.
All right. So, Yoshi, for people who might not have heard of you, if they've heard of our podcast, they probably have heard of your podcast. But just a little quick background of how you got to where you're at and maybe a quick rundown of the things that you're working with.
Okay, cool. So, to start, I don't have the typical like reptile keeper story. I got into it after high school. I was the kind of kid that I didn't want to get dirty. I didn't want to touch anything. My dad always had animals because he bred birds, but I had horrible allergies. So for me, I thought animals and I was going to sneeze.
Allergies.
So yeah. I just never thought about it. I pretty much spent all my youth doing music. And then in the Miami local scene, just out of friends and stuff like that, somebody was giving away a turtle and I was like, wait a second, I don't think I'm gonna sneeze on this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I got the turtle, fell in love with the turtle. One turtle turned into 20. Yep. And then, you know, I'm in the reptile industry pretty much. So right now I'm working with a bunch of turtles. I'm working with striped mud turtles. I have some like morph red-eared sliders, Japanese Reeves turtles, pink belly side necks, some map turtles. Heck yeah. Tortoise wise, only red for tortoises. I've done sulcatas, hermans, Greek tortoises. Obviously, I got ball pythons. Everybody's got ball pythons. then I have my brettles, I have some blue tongues, and some like Felsuma and stuff like that. Oh, and different like new cow stuff, like some crests and some gargoyles.
Hey. Yeah, I think that map turtles are like criminally underrated. Mm-hmm. They are such a unique looking turtle and they're just like, you just don't see them in the hobby very much. And then we used to get in like little razorback musk turtles and those things have got too much personality for such a small turtle.
Yeah. I used to have a group of them, but in the pond that I had them, I had a buddy of mine that gave me a whole bunch of fish. It was different koi and different cichlids. I didn't know anything about fish. I was just like, I'm gonna have fish in this pond. Cichlids suck. Cichlids want to fight everything.
They kill things. Yeah, they're aggressive. Yeah.
And that's what happened to my razorbacks.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks. You're like, this, I didn't even want the fish. They messed my turtles up, man.
Oh,
dude, that's crazy. And so you do a little bit of outside keeping too, where you kept your brettles outside and some of your, I think you said you got some Felsuma stuff. So you get geckos and stuff outside too. And you were able to reproduce a bread lie outside. Dude.
Yeah.
I need to know more. I've listened to a little bit of the process in your podcast, but for the people here.
Yeah. So something that I wish I had like a grand story for you, but something that my dad taught me when he was working with birds is that the more you mess with them, the less you're going to get the results that you want. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, I need to put these animals outside. When I decided on the brettles, my whole thing was, I just moved to Central Florida. I want to keep a python outside that can handle this cold and the heat. And then I found the brettles, you know, so it was more about finding the right pair at the right size that I felt like if I put them in a good cage, they're going to do fine. Once they were together, I just made sure that feeding them was fine. I was, you know, feeding small meals every week just so I could make sure that they were able to feed separate from each other without messing with each other. I just really watched their behavior, which was very impressive because, you know, I expected the animals to kind of like be out in certain part of the days and they were not. They only came out at a certain, pretty much like they were out somewhere between 4 or 5 PM. And then they spent the whole night out pretty much. And just watching their behavior is that the male and the female always had their places in the cage and they didn't really mess with each other unless they were breeding. Mm-hmm. So honestly, it was just upkeep, keeping them together. I didn't really mess with them throughout the cold season. Right now, what I noticed with the female specifically is she'll go to her arboreal hide. She hangs out there. The male goes into one of like I have a hide that's just a bunch of like cinder blocks and then some cypress mulch on top. Mm-hmm. And he hangs out there and they just really haven't come out. And now I'm just waiting for them to start getting active. Once they get active again, I'll start feeding and just waiting for breeding behavior.
So do you have in the cinder block hide area, do you have any heating elements in there? Or is it just like just protected just from the cypress? Yep. That's cool.
Yep. And that's so cool. Cypress mulch thing was something that I learned from Ron St. Pierre. When I went to his place, I was asking him, I was like, hey, like, are you doing like any heating? You know, because I've seen Kenan's video. Kenan always has like some kind of heating and
heated box.
And my thing was, I'm like terrified of fire. So I'm like, whatever I'm keeping outside, I got to figure out a way to do this where I can have minimal electricity and heat outside. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, dude, like, so Ron was telling me that the cypress mulch kind of acts like, insulation. Mm-hmm. So the sun hits that bag and it's just creating heat throughout the day. So whatever heat that the animals are going to need, they're gonna find that. And I've seen the brettles come out like when it's like, even though the ambient might be 50 degrees, he's sitting right on top, the male specifically, on the bag of cypress mulch just because it's hotter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's cool. And like for me, I'm thinking like, okay, as it sits out there longer and longer and longer, it starts to decompose, and that decomposing will create heat too.
Yep.
Have you ever temp gunned it to like see what temp it's sitting at?
I haven't recently just because right now I'm getting home so late that I'm having issues like finding the right time to do that. But this weekend is supposed to be like one of the coldest weekends that we've had in a while. And that's when I'm going to go ahead and do that and check all that stuff out.
And they're going to stay outside even with the cold.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That's tight. Dude,
I haven't had any issues. Of course, like it's trial and error. The only time that I will consider to bring them in is if I know it's going to rain heavily and then be cold. That is it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But next year, I think I might even do something different because something that I do, for example, with the blue tongues that I keep outside is I have like a black plastic sheeting.
Yeah.
That covers
the water. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm going to try that next year to see if I feel comfortable keeping them like that.
That's really cool. The Felsuma, do you do the same thing or no?
Yeah.
So that's wild.
That's really crazy. Yeah.
I'm keeping, I if there's something that I've learned the past few months is I don't believe in reptiles, okay? I don't believe in it. Dude, I have crested geckos outside right now that are, that they haven't lost weight, that I've noticed like behaviors that they're really coming out and basking when the heat's coming out and taking advantage of the heat because it's cold out. And I've just been keeping an eye on a lot of this stuff. And I'm like, man, like, I'm not going to say that they're so tolerant, but I'm like, okay, if I'm able to like reproduce them like this, like clearly they could handle a little bit more than what we're expecting.
Yeah. They're not as fragile as people kind of think of them to be, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I've heard that from multiple sources when it comes to like cresteds and stuff like that, like keeping them outside. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, they're just too, it'd be too hot or it could get too cold and they're going to drop. And it's like, no, these things are fine, dude.
Yeah.
Like we've kind of boxed ourselves in a little bit on methodology and thought processes as far as keeping, so it's definitely interesting to hear, especially stuff like Felsuma. I'm surprised by the Felsuma. I figured that would have been.
I was like, man. In,
so. So last year I brought them in whenever it was going below 55. But this past year I wanted to give them a bigger enclosure and I didn't have like the foresight to think I am a little dude and I'm going to have an issue bringing this in every other day and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, let me see how they are the first couple nights of, you know, like some of the cold snaps. They did fine. And I haven't ever since, like with the set where I put them specifically in my yard, I haven't had any issues. And I even have babies in the enclosures and they've been doing fine. I'll feed them on the days that there's sun. I see that a lot of them come out and take advantage of the heat. You know, they'll eat, they'll drink some water, and then they'll go and they'll just, you know, find their shelter for the night. Yeah.
Dude, that's really cool. And I feel like that New Caledonia stuff, people are like, oh, you just got to keep it at room temperature. You got to keep it at room temperature. Don't let it get any close to, like, as soon as it gets over 80, it's going to die. You get it underneath this, it's going to, you know, drop. And I feel like maybe we might be conditioning them as well to be closer like that. If you raise an animal like that its entire life and then it experiences it once, it's going to really be more drastic to it than an animal that has just been raised like that. Hmm. So that's really interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about like, if you keep them in a box, you know, and like most of us will keep them in a bin or keep them in a PVC enclosure. Like if you have a light on that, like you're just cooking that animal. There's not a lot of ventilation, but I have them in reptibreezes. So it's a lot of ventilation, you know, in Central Florida, it rains a lot. And, you know, if I notice that it didn't rain during the week, like I'll spray them a couple times. So I'm keeping them, you know, they are in shade. I'm keeping them, you know, humid and stuff like that, you know, with misting and they've been doing fine. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you been keeping them like that?
I think I started keeping them like that during summer. So when it was hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think one of the key things too is, you know, we start thinking about the temperature extremes, especially for stuff like new cows, but you know, like when we even had Ron on talking about the emeralds and stuff, like one of the biggest elements was also humidity and access to water. And if you're able to provide those elements at the key point, you know, like when it is 100 degrees in Florida, you know, if that animal is getting rained on by a 75 degree rain,
yeah,
that animal is not 100 degrees, you
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
So it does help kind of regulate that intensity. But when we're thinking keeping in a cage, you know, we're thinking about, oh, if that cage is 100 degrees, it's going to be really hard to keep that humidity up, or, you know, like, do I have a mist system to do something to kind of mitigate those circumstances? And more often than not, when we're talking about something like a crested gecko or something, we're not talking about a huge enclosure. We're talking about, you know, maybe a little 12 by 12 by 18 Exoterra. So chances are you don't have that connected to a mist king or any other kind of climate control things. So yeah, you get that thing 100 degrees. Right. So it's like, yeah, you get that thing 100 degrees, it will drop because it's just got to 100 degrees.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool. That is super interesting. So, so do you notice, I guess, especially with the geckos, because I feel like I know with snakes, they're like super, super habitual. So are you noticing the same thing with the geckos, like when they're constantly coming out at X time, and then like they dip.
So not with the Felsuma. The Felsuma really do take advantage of everything in their enclosure. They're active. Mm. They're always doing their thing. With the crested geckos, I've noticed, because I'm keeping them in trios, I've noticed that each of them has their plant that they want to be on. That's pretty much it. You know, like, you know, they're going to come out at night just because they're mainly nocturnal, you know. But yeah, as far as where they're usually at in the enclosure, it's always on the same plant that they just hang out on. Yeah.
That's cool. That's super cool. Imagine that, a home plant.
Well, you got to figure in the wild, they're probably using, you know, droppings and scent to mark the areas where they're generally hanging out. Like we see that with tokay geckos all the time. Like even like, I'm trying to think, like I've seen people who are like, I let my tokay gecko free roam in my reptile room. And it's like, it's got one spot where it likes to hang out. And then like, you'll see it around, but it always goes back to that same spot where it feels safe and secure. And it's got the droppings there of the scent to let it know that it's safe. So yeah. it's funny that we think of certain reptiles like that and not other ones, you know?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Heck yeah, dude. I'm here for it. So with your blue tongue stuff, are you doing anything with the blue tongues outside, or are those just like...
Yes. So I actually, right behind me, this is my blue tongue rack. I had about 40-something adult blue tongues, and I only have about 20 in this rack now. The rest of them are outside.
Hell yeah.
I've been doing blue tongues for a few years now, and again, after visiting Ron and Heather at their place and seeing the way that their animals look, the way that they behave, I was like, dude, there's no way that this is the way for them. It's just not, you know. I think that this, it works, or it has worked in the past to get them to breed. So we are able to, you know, have them for the pet trade and stuff like that. But as far as like being able to offer the best care for them, that, you know, they're going to need UV. They can handle temperature drops. They can handle some humidity. So I'm cool with keeping them outside, you know.
Heck yeah, dude.
And do you have any heating elements in their enclosures or no?
Nope. Same thing. Cypress, black sheet. That's it. Yep.
Damn. the way of nature.
Yeah, no. So I just like strategically like place things in their enclosure. You know, like I know as far as like where the sun goes in my house, as far as where the enclosure is, I'm like, okay, at this time of the day, it's going to be the hottest and it's going to be in this area. So I'm going to make sure the cypress bag is there. You know, it's just a little bit of that playing with what I have.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's like, again, when we had Ron on, was kind of talking about like, you have to understand where you're at, like just geographically, like where you're at, but B, like wherever you have your animals on your property, like you'll see like, okay, I get a lot more sun on this, you know, at this time, whatever, blah, blah, blah. If you have trees and stuff like that, you start to work out those things to be able to make sure that everything's dialed in.
Yeah. I owe a lot of what I'm doing today to Heather and Ron for sure. They're brains, man. Like they know what it is that they're doing. And whenever they talk, I keep my mouth shut and I listen and I'm like, okay, yes, dad. Yes, mom. Yes.
Dude, I still say that, you know, cause we have so many different people on, and we typically don't often talk much on husbandry elements, cause those podcasts really already exist for the most part.
Yeah.
But, you know, having that podcast with Ron was probably one of the most like thought provoking husbandry related podcasts. I think that exists, like, period, you know, because he's really like taken so many elements for some of these species that we thought like we know everything about and just like shit on all of it. Just like everything you think, you know, guess what? You're wrong. And I can back it up.
Yeah,
you not just one, not just two, how about 80, you know, animals that are going through those same things and they're crushing it, like seeing his imported emeralds that look better now, you know, 8 months outside in Florida than they did when they first came in from South America. It's just like, what did you do?
Yeah.
Cypress and a black sheep.
Dude, that makes me think of when we went to Tom Crutchfield's place and those croc monitors. He was telling us, he's like, yeah, I just keep these croc monitors outside. And I'm like, and they don't go crazy? He's like, no, they don't have a reason to go crazy. And right. Dude, I swear, he just opened up the door, walked right in there, and these things just come right out. Hey, what's up, bro? Everything's just chill. Like everything's cool.
And you're just like, what is going on?
You're like, I know I'm bad at spelling, but are you Salvadori right now? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
That was a really bad reptile nerd joke. I'm sorry.
It was.
I appreciated it.
There's only six other people that will.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, dude.
No, but it's super cool, dude. So with your blue tongue stuff, like, are there any projects that you're working on that you're like super, super into? Or are you just like, hey, man, I just really love producing blue tongues. It doesn't matter.
I specifically specialize in like the red stuff. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, I started like breeding pretty much everybody's red lines together. And I produced what I was calling like the Fuego or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of like my project. It's the Fuego blue tongue. So it's high red stuff, some like really dark stuff. I have some ivories and stuff like that, which are breeding this year. So
hell yeah,
dude.
That's really cool.
Yeah, man.
What was it like with the first time that you saw an ivory in person? Because when I saw him, I'm like, whoa, that's wild, bro.
It was how do I say, I don't want to be like, it was emotional, dude, but it was kind of emotional. Cause I was like, oh my God, like we're going to like, this is real. Now mm-hmm. ask me, how did I feel mm-hmm. as I saw the prices drop? That was emotional.
Also emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but they're gorgeous animals. I think that the future is bright with them. A lot of people see just like a white animal and liken it automatically to like a blue-eyed Lucy ball python. And they're just like, oh, that's like the pinnacle. But I don't see that as like it's the finish line for it. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's a couple things that we can do with them to hopefully bring out some of that pattern. Because you'll notice that some of them aren't all white. Some of them have a little bit of like mm-hmm. a pink or a yellow pattern and stuff like that. I think that they're very, I look at them and it reminds me of like an ivory ball python. So with an ivory ball python, you can mix Enchi, you can mix leopard, and you can bring out some patterns. So that's kind of where my head is at with ivory.
Dude, it's so interesting to me because like people, when you talk about certain species, they're like, mm-hmm. oh, well, like that's the end of the line for it because like, look at what it looks like. And for 100% certain, they were saying the same thing, you know, not them specifically, but people in general were saying the same thing about ball pythons 40 years ago. They're like, it is a dirt brown snake with black markings. You are not going to be able to make this thing look interesting. And then now mm-hmm. if you look at the color palette that is accessible in ball mm-hmm. pythons, it just makes me think like when people are like, oh, well, you know, like there's no really purple snakes. I'm like, just think about the amount of things that you've been like have been really thoroughly bred and bred into different mutations to see the variation in color palette. Cause like there are certain areas where corn snakes are very colorful, but like in general, like the North Carolina corn snakes are brown, bro. They are brown, gray, brown,
right. Yeah,
like dark tan. They're not a very eye catching snake. But you see some of the color palette and where it can go. It just makes you look at things like blue tongues and people are like, oh, well, like northern blue tongues, they got like, you know, the bright size and they're kind of cool. And then they look at the like, I don't know if they're still calling them Irian Jaya, the Papuan stuff. And they're like, oh, well, they're just black and brown. There's not anything interesting to be done there. And I'm like, how many people are breeding them right now? How many like different mutations have we seen come in? How many... Yeah. We have not started. And if you look at ball pythons from where they started to where they are now, just by working with them and people picking out things and working on it, like there's so much potential in blue tongues, I think, that people limit themselves a lot when they look at species that are not initially eye-catching and then they just kind of write them off, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I'm hoping for the same trajectory for blue tongues that was like ball pythons. there's a bunch of different species. They all look kind of different. I think the mm-hmm. community is starting to get to a place that we're kind of like looking at them similar to like carpet pythons, where we're like, yeah, we can hybridize them. And, you know, for the, it's for the pet trade kind of thing. I'm sorry, bro. I'm sorry.
And Rob's out.
Okay. This is the thing. This is what the people in Australia are doing anyways with the fucking yes. Easterns and the Northerns. That, you know, because Easterns usually aren't like the most, they don't have the most vigor and stuff like that. The males are usually a little bit slow and stuff like that. And being able to get some of the Eastern mutations into the Northerns is what's made them so prolific. Mm-hmm. So, and because we're like so limited on stock of Australian animals here in the United States, like mm-hmm. if we can bring in like some of the IJs and, you know, breed them into the Northerns, that's going to help at least diversify some of that blood. So we're just not doing a whole bunch of inbreeding and stuff like that. He hates me now. He hates me.
I was going to say, look, Rob is ready to dip. And
I don't know, man.
I'm cool. Look, I'm cool with like my pure Northerns. Like I haven't hybridized anything.
He's like, I just want to put that out there now.
Yeah. Well, some turtles I have, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But as far as the blue tongues, no, like I haven't crossed them yet. Hopefully I can get something in the future, but I want to get into the morphs and stuff like that. So it's just bound to happen. Yeah.
He's like, I want to breed a Northern to a Western just to like really get it out there, you know?
No, that's different.
Is it though?
Is it?
Yeah.
Dude, I just want to make Northwesterns, bro.
I love those Western blue tongues. Those things are so wild to me. Like I like things with contrast. Mm. And when it comes to contrast, Western blue tongues are like.
Yeah.
They're so tight.
I'm very similar with the contrast and stuff like that, which is what like I'm trying to focus with my Fuego project with the blue tongues, because a lot of like the red Northerns, they're either the red is like really whack and it's just the banding is dark, you know, or the red is closer to the orange and bright, but then there's no dark banding. So I'm trying to get like bright red sides with dark banding. That's the whole idea. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, so I like the idea of playing with these like polygenic variations within them. So and the reality also is that's how all of these snakes that have like a million morphs now, like it all derived from somebody paying attention to a minute difference, trying to see if they could enhance it, and then go from there. And if that piques enough interest, you start getting enough people involved, bam, you know, you've got the next mutation that starts to flow in. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, I used to make fun of one of my friends that he would pick apart every yellow belly slider that he used to like breed. He was like, "Oh, but this one has a little bit of a weird pattern. This one has a little bit." I'm like, "Bro, it's just a yellow belly." I get it now. That I've been doing this a little bit longer, I'm like, "I get it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
How's breeding for you guys this time of year?
Jeremy
breeding right now is kind of slow. Yeah. I do have some ball python locks happening. Speaking of ball python locks, I'm highlighting this just because he's here. Hi, Antoine. This is not a safe space for ball python people.
That's not true. We'll pick on you, but it's a safe place.
it's moderately safe, you know. Yeah. I've got some ball python stuff happening right now. And then I start breeding the Amazons in another like 2 months or so. It seems to be when they start to cycle here. So I'm excited for that. I don't think I'm doing too much with carpets this year. I might do one or two jungle pairings. I've had a couple locks on some short tails, so I'm excited about that. What else? I think that might be about it for right now. Colubrids a little bit later in the spring. I'll do like some cow kings and corn snakes, but nothing too crazy. Trying to keep numbers a little limited so I can focus more resources onto the Amazons.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah, look at that. I'm not breeding 5 million ball pythons like I have in years past.
Bro. Yeah, I got some short tail locks. Scrubs won't start cycling for another 2 months or so. So Janet's thick as hell, so I'm sure that that should go smoothly. I don't know. I'll know when the males start going crazy. I'll be like, okay, cool, it's gonna happen. And
Rob, just cypress and black sheet, and
there you go,
works out, dude.
No, I do use cypress in her enclosure. So
there you go, so
black sheet, and you and you're golden, dude.
I put a black sheet over it when she was laying her eggs.
See,
we solved it. That's how
you have just given away the true secret of the reptile industry.
Right.
Yep. Right. Did you ever read that giant book by Kevin McCurley? Wrong. Cypress and black sheep.
Bro.
That's great. Mm.
So you work with some Felsuma too. I wanted to talk about those because I thoroughly enjoy Felsuma, even though I don't keep any. I like them. So you got Klemmerei, right?
No, I have Grandis. I don't know what the scientific name for the peacocks are. I always fuck it up.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I have some line day geckos. I didn't enjoy the Grandis.
Mm.
I feel like a lot of people are producing them and they're very, you know, I'm a little guy. Those are big animals for me. Okay.
He's like, they fill up my hands so much.
Yeah. 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 And I was just like, you know what? Like, I'll let some other people mess with those. So I'm trying to find a couple more of the smaller species to start working with.
Klemmerei.
Okay.
They're really cool, hell man, yeah. And you can keep them in pretty good sized groups and everything. Wait, so you're saying you don't like standing eye?
So if this is the thing, I was supposed to have standing eye. I can't get too much into it, but now they're with Eddie Soto from Serpentera Exotics. If he's still in the chat, okay. I see you, dog.
Okay. I know where you live, dog. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Bro,
no, they're cool. They're cool though. It's just if I could focus on the smaller stuff, small like me, I'm cool with it.
Have you checked out Josh's frogs and their like micro gecko stuff?
No, I have not.
Dude, they work with so many different species of micro geckos. Like, I'm the last time I went to Tinley, I was just like looking through all the different species that they had there, because I'm pretty sure they had yellow-headed reef geckos and like viper geckos, and I'm trying to think, man, they had Klemmerei. They had so many cool, and they're like, yeah, we just like little geckos, so we've got a ton of little itty bitty tiny geckos. And I'm like, I have like really big hands, so when I look at little geckos, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna accidentally squish you. I can't do this right now.
I feel that.
Oh, gosh. But Rob, it would make for a really good photo op if you had like a bunch of tiny micro geckos on your fingertips.
All in my hand. Yeah, hell, I could fit like 20 of them on there.
Yeah. You'd be like, look, I found the world's population of yellow-headed reef geckos.
All on right my here. Fingers.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Very cool. Oh, I've been waiting for people to find out about some of those other micro gecko species, because I think with people getting more into stuff that you can keep in smaller enclosures, like a lot of people in the arachnid community are getting into jumping spiders, which like you just need like a little tiny little thing for them. People doing isopods, they're just like, I just want this little tiny itty bitty thing and that I can raise in here. And I'm like, oh man, those are all so tiny. What the fuck?
Yeah. But
meanwhile, Rob's like, scrub.
I'm still pulling it out.
Pause.
Yeah. That's gonna get clipped. And that'll get clipped.
Yes. Somebody clip it.
This is my thing. So I have to be very careful with what I try to get into, because I don't think I want to keep a lot of things in my reptile room anymore. I have like my ball python, some of the blue tongues, but like I think I'm kind of like maxed out with this. I want to put more stuff outside. So if it can handle heat, if it can handle humidity, if it can handle cold, I'm interested in it. I just got a pair. Well, I purchased them. They haven't come in yet, of diamond pythons. Yes. And that's, yeah, that's going to be the next thing. That's going to be the next thing that I will raise up work with those.
I think that, that Morelia House, Brandon Wheeler, I'm pretty sure he's got diamond pythons outside in California.
Nice.
He posts, I'm pretty sure he posts videos of them on his Instagram. I'm trying to think of whether it was those or, carpet pythons, inland carpet pythons. I'm totally spacing right now.
I think it might have been diamonds.
I'm pretty sure it's diamonds.
I think so too.
And somebody else that's on the podcast with those guys, they have a they're doing the inland carpets outside.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm cool with the carpets outside. Depending on how the diamond, because I'm not, since they're going to be babies when they come in, I don't think I'm going to stick them right outside. I want to see how I do raising them outside and as they get a little bit older and when I put them outside and raising them in the conditions and see how they do. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of like trying to figure out my lane here. I was talking to with Jeremy. I think it was like last week that I was like looking at everything that I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't even know how much of this I want to do. Like I'm having issues with like some ball pythons. I'm like, I don't know if I want to keep a lot of this stuff. I'm just like in this transitional period.
Yeah. I feel very similarly. I'm like, things are about to swiftly change and shift here.
Yeah.
Another person who would be good to talk to would be Tom Crutchfield, because he's got diamond pythons outside and he reproduces them outside
all frequently. Yeah. Frequently.
Nice.
It was crazy when we were there. He was like, "Oh yeah, there." I tempt them, and their body temperature is at 100 degrees, and they're just chilling there, out in the sun. He's like, "It's hot as shit outside," and they're still basking. And then all of a sudden, they'll just like whoop, down into the water and chill out for a little while, and then they'll just be back out basking. Man, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I don't believe in reptiles, man. The cold, they can handle it. Yeah, the Brettles. I've seen the Brettles bask at like probably about 110 degrees, just hanging out on top of a cinder block, just taking in all the heat, direct sun. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Crazy, dude.
I'd be so curious to get a temp gun on that to see what their surface temperature is sitting at, because like, that's wild.
Yeah. 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 I'm going to pay a little bit closer attention to it this year for sure.
Yeah. I got a temp gun in that I keep my reptile room, my living room. And every now and again, I'll see a snake doing something weird, and I'll like just go temp gun them and just see like what are you doing? What are you sitting at right now? Like they'll be sitting like almost touching the heat panel. I'm like, what are you doing?
No, it's true, man. It's true. I would definitely be interested. That's the thing that I love about speaking with people who keep stuff outside, because you're really taking everything that we know, right, and just like nah. Like that's just not real. That's just absolutely not real. And
it's definitely a different experience. I enjoy it a lot. I spend my whole Sundays outside taking care of the animals, and it's like the best day for my mental health. Like it's just the most fun. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Dude. Hell yeah. While you're out there, you're getting natural sunlight, you're getting that vitamin D.
Yeah. I love a good vitamin D. Pause.
Just click.
Yep.
Guys, what are we doing?
We're having a podcast right now, Jeremy. Thank you for joining us.
Oh gosh. Oh man. Let's see. We got a question here in the chat. You want to work with some Nerodia outside, bro?
No.
No.
Damn.
Yoshi doesn't like to get bit, man. What?
I don't. That's another thing. I hate getting bit. I don't want to work with anything that I'm going to like be like worried about. I don't want to be outside. This is the thing. I don't want to be outside bleeding and then I have to stick my hand in a turtle pond.
True. Have you ever been bit by a blue tongue?
Yes.
Bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
That sucks. It hurts. Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, but I'm used to it now. Like I'm like fast, so I'm like, oh.
He's like, I got my wax on, wax off, ready to go, man.
Man, you're like a spider monkey.
Yep.
Bro.
Oh gosh, I'm here for it.
What So you're working with a bunch of different turtle species. What is like your? I don't want to say your favorite project, because I know that there's like a lot of projects that you're really into. What is one that you're like passionate about.
Oh, striped mud turtles. Striped mud turtles. With the little thing, they're small. Mm-hmm. They're small, and surprisingly, they come in so many color variations. It's amazing. Mm. I've worked in the past with a lot of like the really like blonde ones. But then even like different like localities, well, some of them will have like almost like a brown red like plastron. Some of them, like the brown on the carapace, is just ridiculous, great contrast and stuff like that. That was the first turtle that I got, so it's like close to my
nostalgic
heart.
Nostalgic. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Fair.
That's cool. And redfoot tortoises are the best tortoises.
Yeah.
Personality wise, that I've encountered. So.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with the redfoots.
For sure.
But wait, what do you think about the redfoot sulcatas?
I don't mind them. I remember the first time that I saw them.
And Rob's gone.
This is the thing. Look, this is the hybrid thing. I don't mind a hybrid if you're honest with it.
Oh,
if
boy.
If you're honest with it, it is what it is. It has its place. It has its place. The first time that I saw it, I was working for Amir in Miami, and I showed him a picture. I was like, yo, do you think this is real? And he was like, no, it looks like a sulcata that was dipped in Kool-Aid.
that's pretty awesome. Funny. That's freaking awesome.
So you've worked in some reptile shops in yep. Florida. So yes. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this too while we had you on the podcast, because I remember, like, just in working at Nerd, you get stuff in sometimes, you're like, whoa, what the why, where, how? Why? How did this get here right now? Yeah, we got dragon snakes once, and I was like, "Oh man, did we mean to get these? I don't think this was meant to be the thing."
Yeah, we didn't think this one through.
Yeah, I kept them alive, but like, man, I was stressed out about it.
Yeah. So like, continue.
No, I was just gonna say, are there any things that jump out of your mind from being in shops and just seeing stuff come in? And you're like, whoa, what the hell?
I don't think anything too crazy. I mean, specifically like blue tongues. Some of the blue tongues that would come in, I remember there was this Maruki that, dude, it must have been like some kind of hypo or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I would look at it every single day, and I'm like, dude, do I buy this animal? Do I buy this animal and take it home, even though I don't really have a lot of Marukis? I'm not really breeding them, but it's just like, I haven't figured it out. I don't know if it's worth it. And back then we were doing the BSR auctions thing. So it went on auction, it sold. And the guy that had it, like once it got into adulthood, dude, that animal was amazing. I couldn't believe it. That was one. I was like, damn, dude. But honestly, my whole like tenure working in reptile shops, I've been doing online stuff. So I don't work hands-on with any of the animals. I specifically work in e-commerce. So that's all I'm good for.
Damn. It's the little hands, bro.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
I did hear that you keep things in racks, so that's what they said. You're just good for the online stuff.
Exactly. Dude, all the employees at work roast me about the rack keeping. It's the worst. This new generations of keepers, they need to chill. All right.
Yeah. I think it's just interesting because, like, I understand that people are not crazy about racks, but there are some people who are like, the racks should not exist. It's like no one should ever keep anything in a rack ever because I said so. And I'm like, maybe you don't understand, like, certain. Certain reptiles just do better in racks and feel more secure in there. And then also, if you think that we should be keeping these animals in any sort of like conservation like mindset, right? You can't just have two animals and call it conservation. Like, unless you're working with Galapagos tortoises, and even then your numbers are so low that it's not you're saving them from one generation from the inevitable of them becoming extinct, right?
Yeah.
So like, you need to have numbers of something to preserve it for the future, right? Yeah. And so you cannot do that feasibly, at least not in our society, in the way that things are run, unless you are maybe Elon Musk, I guess, could do it. Give every single crested gecko a rainforest room that is made of rainforest and one gecko per room. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they get their own self-driving Tesla to take them to get them pureed papaya. There you go. But people are like, there should not be any. It's like, okay, if that's the case, then every single creature that you want to get, you're going to have to find somebody who is dedicated a huge amount of time and resources to reproducing this animal. Yeah. And they're not going to sell it to you for a, you know, a amount of money that you're going to be willing to pay for it, because they have to be able to recoup the cost that they're putting into,
of course,
reproducing these animals, even if it's just a little bit. So like, if you want every crested gecko to be a $5,000 animal, that's okay. If that's what you want. But realistically, and like looking at the bigger picture, I don't think that's actually what they mean.
Yeah, you know? I think they definitely have their place. Clearly, I have them. But something specifically that you said about the conservation thing. So my buddy Tino, that also does the podcast with
he
used to volunteer at the OCIC in the Indigo Center. And they used to keep the indigos in racks for that specific reason. It's like they need to be able to house as many as possible. They had outside enclosures for some of
preservation.
Yeah, exactly. The point was to preserve the species.
Yep.
So the ends justified the means, you know?
Yeah. And certain people don't understand the nuance when it comes to that sort of thing. And it's very black and white of like, no racks ever. And it's like, what if people keeping those snakes in racks is saving the species? Like, what are you talking about right now? Like, don't get me wrong. There are absolutely ways in which people can abuse and use racks in ways that are not beneficial to the animals that they're in.
Yes. But and that's the nuance right there.
To blanket say, get rid of racks, it just shows that you do not have a nuanced understanding of the world in which we live in, you know?
Yes, I agree.
Rob, what are you talking about? This mysterious middle ground. What is this understanding of which you speak?
Listen, man, I like to, one of my things is that in order for me to feel like I have a good grasp on a topic, I need to be able to understand why the other side thinks that they're so right. Because if they are so passionate about something, I'm like, oh, they're idiots. They don't understand anything. Like, you don't fully understand the topic, because sometimes they have a point. Like, don't get, like, there is a point. There are people who have 5,000 gram ball pythons in 28 quart tubs. That's fucked up. Please don't fucking do that. Why would you do that? That's horrible. And it's just for profit. But there are also places like the Orient Society and zoos. Every single zoo in the country uses racks, and they are AZA accredited for conservation and for education. All of them use racks.
What are you talking about, Rob? That's impossible.
There's a place for it. But a lot of people think in this very like black or white thinking, racks are always bad. Racks are bad. Racks are bad. Racks are bad. And there's people who are like, no, racks are good. Put everything in a rack. I can do turtles in racks. I can do, you know, people who are like, no, I think that you can do every single thing in a rack. And it's like, maybe not everything, but like, come on, there's got to be understanding from both sides. And that's why, like, there's a podcast called Reptile Fight Club. And I like listening to some of those arguments, because sometimes they've got people on there who are like super duper on opposite sides, and you can hear, okay, this person's really coming from this side and this person's really coming from this side. You go, okay, that person's got a couple of good points and also some probably not some great points. This person over here has got some really good points too. And then you can kind of make your mind up, and usually ends up somewhere in the middle, and you could be more to one side or more to the other side. Yeah. But I think that I get frustrated when I see people who are like, oh, racks are the devil, get rid of nothing should ever be in a rack. And I'm like, okay, you just are willfully ignorant, or you just have like a very rigid worldview and you cannot grasp information that contradicts what you already think, you know?
Yeah, I think that was a great way to put it. 100%. I agree with you for sure.
Yeah.
You're such a smart guy, dude.
No, I'm still learning things every single day. Every
I look back at the... and a black sheet, dude.
Yes, dude, I learned something new today.
That's great,
dude. That's awesome.
Oh gosh,
hell yeah.
So
I'm here for it though.
So yeah, I think that you were saying that like that crazy blue tongue came in. I think that when I was working at Nerd, every now and again I'd see like a ball python come through, and I'm like, whoa, what the? Where the hell did that thing freaking come from? Where?
Yeah.
Weird. Or we would get in. You know, there was one time. Jeremy, do you remember when we got in the African pixie frogs?
Yes.
The
giant boxes of African pixie frogs. So I think it was like 150 African pixie frogs. Yes. And I was like looking through, and I was like, oh wow, this one's kind of more yellow. Look at this one over here. It's got like some actual pattern on it. What the hell's going on right now? And I'm like, this is actually kind of cool.
Many pixie frogs.
So many pixie frogs. So many pixie frogs.
Not a fan. But, Not a fan.
Really? You don't like the big walking mouth?
I don't like frogs.
Whoa. Like blanket frogs?
I am terrified of frogs. Legitimately.
But because they're slimy?
Dude, it's like a little bit of everything. It's like the slimy factor. Ah! It's the big eyes that are just like I don't know. And then a Cuban tree frog here in Central Florida hopping at you, dude. Not fun. I don't want that anywhere near me, period. It's over.
Okay, so I know how we're pranking Yoshi.
No,
bro.
Oh, dude.
No.
We're filling up his hotel room with Cuban tree frogs, bro.
Alex Concepcion put a toad in my face, bro. I almost disowned him. I was like, bro, like, it's over with us. Dude.
Oh my God. Okay,
you'll see a grown little man cry that day.
The tallest man in the industry crying. Yes. And it's like, he's so tall, I didn't think that he would cry. And you're like, tall men have emotions too, okay?
We just didn't know they would be shown via frog. But
that's crazy, because like I love frogs a lot. I don't like keep them, but I love frogs. And like growing up, I used to go to New Hampshire camping with my mom and my sister. And when my mom would go to the grocery store, we would just stay outside because they had like a drainage pond out in front of the grocery store. And I would just sit out there with a net and just be catching frogs, man, frogs all day, leopard frogs, bullfrogs, catching them all. I can't hold enough frogs in my hands, man.
Yeah, no, hard pass, dude. Yeah, it's like, it's the worst because I like turtles so much, dude.
Oh, and where there's turtles, there's always frogs.
Bro, I remember dude, Chucky and Tino took me out to go herping one night. And that's like something that I've been trying to do more since I've been in the industry for so long. Like I wasn't really like, not that I wasn't into herping. It's just, I never did it. I never went out and looked for animals. So they've like taken me under their wing, and they're like, let's go out. Let's go do stuff. And one night after a podcast, Chuck's like, oh, I know where we could find some striped mud turtles if you want to see them. And I was like, 100%. Yeah. But then I would also see that the two of them were like gossiping in a corner. I'm like, what's going on here? And buddy, when I tell you, leopard frogs everywhere,
left and right.
And they were like, oh, you were surprisingly quiet. And I was like, dude, I was dying inside.
Bro.
Oh gosh. Dude, yeah, that's hilarious. I'm pretty sure I can find somebody. I can get a chicken frog. And dude, at Daytona, I just won't say anything. It'll just from behind you, all you'll hear is,
listen, I know I gotta get over it. At my own pace.
We'll get you over it. We'll get you over it.
Immersion therapy, whether that immersion is slow and steady, or if we're just throwing you in a vat of fucking frogs and telling you to get over it.
Oh man, dude.
So Jeremy, you want to do the closing question? I'm gonna be right back, okay?
Okay. All right.
He's gonna go grab a frog.
Yeah, right. He's coming back with a frog. Okay, so the question, it is our staple question, and that is, what in the realm of reptiles, whether it be something in your own collection, something you've seen online, scrolling through social, what in the realm of reptiles has you excited about reptiles? Ha! Ha! Rah!
That's hilarious.
It's a really bad horror movie, but
yeah,
I'll bring it to Daytona. We can watch it.
Okay, so for the audio only listeners, he brought a DVD called Frogs.
Frogs. Yeah. It's a really old horror movie about frogs. Today the pond, tomorrow the world.
Honestly, oh, I love a good horror movie, so I am down. I am so down. Okay, so one more time, the question.
Yes. Yeah, so what in the realm of reptiles, be it horror movies from the 80s or it's something in your own collection or something you may have seen online, what in the realm of reptiles has you excited about reptiles right now?
I don't want to say I hate to keep bringing them up, but I'm going to bring them up again. Heather and Ron, what they're doing with blue tongues. That is like 100%. Like if I even had like a simmer of my spark, like dissipating for blue tongues, that brought it back. Every time that they post something, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Where can I find more space in my yard to put more outside cages? Cause I'm going to figure this out. I would say the majority of my energy in the next few years is going to be blue tongues. Just blue tongues, blue tongues, blue tongues.
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. Yep. And if people want to find out what you're doing or see what you're doing, where should they go check you out?
So Modern Reptiles Shop pretty much everywhere. And I do a podcast with a couple guys called the Reptiles With Podcast. It's like comedy and we argue a lot.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, man. It's great having you on. I appreciate you coming on tonight, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Hell yeah, dude.
I'd love looking to do it again. This was fun. I love you guys.
Yeah.
I love you too, man. Be good and temp gun things. I want to see some temp gun.
Yes.
Pictures. We'll do. I'll send you pictures.
Temp gun frog. Go temp gun some frogs.
Okay, man. We'll catch you next time.
For sure. Have a good night.
See ya.